There's probably a little bit too much fuss made about scores.
I think I'm a farmer deep down at heart. I wanted a family endeavor.
It's not about what someone else says. It's not about what rating it got. It's about what you enjoy drinking.
Wine, to start with, is something that is social.
It's about networking. It's about calling up people and ask for advice. And everybody's willing to help out.
Consumer wants something that's uncomplicated about wine. Why do you want one more thing to worry about?
I would trade this for nothing. It is my life and it is my dream.
You know, you only get to make one wine a year. It's not very much. I've been making wine most of my adult life, you know. It's only 35 Cabernets. I don't think that's a lot. I'm up for more.
We say, so drink the wine. That's kind of our motto here at Life Between the Vines. One of the cool things about wine, besides drinking it, is the people you drink it with. And the stories you hear and tell with wine all come together to make every bottle unique. Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle. And welcome to the May 2011 podcast, and is a special on women in wine. In this issue, we feature Sharon Harris of Wine on Trefem, Haley Trefethen of Trefethen Family Vineyards, and Heather Patz of Patz and Hall Wines. This podcast is sponsored by Waterford Wine. Find them on the web at waterfordwine.com.
Start off this special edition of Life Between the Vines, dedicated to women in the wine business. We're joined by Sharon Harris of Rare Cat and Common Dog Wine. Sharon is founder of Wine Entre Femmes, a group originally consisting of women from Napa and Bordeaux, which has grown to include several other countries. We've interviewed members of Wine Entre Femmes in the past, including Amy Aiken of Meander Wine, Linda Neal of Tierra Roja, Karen Cakebread of Ziada, and others. We joined Sharon at her home in St. Helena on a cool afternoon in February to talk about the growing numbers of women involved in all aspects of the wine industry. I'm here with Sharon Harris at her home in St. Helena, along with Rascal standing here keeping guard. First of all, thanks for having me here at your home. I really
appreciate
it. Thanks
for coming.
Oh, my pleasure. It's a beautiful day. Yeah. It's a little cool, but it's a beautiful day. You head up a group called Wine Entre Femmes.
Yes.
I pronounce that right, correct?
That's correct.
So tell me about it.
So I have spent many years of my life in Bordeaux, France, and studied wine at the University of Bordeaux. And so about 2005, and it really dawned on me, literally in a parking lot talking to another friend in the wine industry, that, you know, wouldn't it be great to take women who are in the wine industry in Bordeaux who aren't really supported in their, I shouldn't say supported, but they're not, they don't have a long history of being in the industry, yet their history goes back 500, 600, 700, I mean, actually pre-Roman times in terms of winemaking. And wouldn't it be great to take some of these fantastic women, these women I knew from my class, from being in the industry, and bring them to Napa and have them meet some of the fantastic women in wine in Napa. And even though our history in Napa is certainly a lot shorter, the women have been a huge part of that history in developing the Napa Valley. And so we did about 4 years ago, 11 women from Bordeaux came over and met a group of women from Napa, and we put together a four-day curriculum, in essence, of sharing information over winemaking techniques, over marketing of wine, over vineyard management techniques. And it was just, it was a huge success. The following year, the Bordeaux women invited the Napa women to Bordeaux. 15 of us went. I think it's the first time I really thought I could possibly be royalty, because they treated us as such. It was just phenomenal. And we had the same experience in education of over vineyard management techniques, over winemaking techniques, learning different appellations, different wines, all sorts of phenomenal programs they put together. And so, and then the third year, we invited women from around the world. So not only were our dear friends from Bordeaux, did they come over and join us last year in January, but a woman from Japan, the only woman winemaker from Japan, a woman from Turkey, a woman from South Africa, women from around the world. And I think last year we probably had about 60 or 70 women from the Napa Valley attend. And again, just high quality education, sharing information with peers. So this Wine Entre Femmes group has really started just getting together among women in the industry. It's a non-competitive group. We get together to share information, to learn about each other's wines, to support each other in the industry. And then a pet kind of something for me that I think is important is, as a female in the wine industry, how could we do a better job reaching out to female wine consumers and making wine more approachable, making it easier to understand? You know, how can we use our vocabulary to help grow the industry overall?
That's real interesting that you bring that up, making wine more approachable, because Life Between the Vines' goal is the exact same thing, not to make it so scary. And I don't think people, especially in America, realize how many women are winemakers.
There are phenomenal women winemakers. I mean, I just step back and look here in the Napa Valley, and I think about the phenomenal group of women, not only winemakers, but wine owners, people who have started wineries, who run wineries, people who make wine, people who manage vineyards. But, you know, I think about the women in our group. You've got, oh my goodness, you've got, you know, Beth Milliken, a dear friend, who she and her mom, just epic women in the wine industry, starting Spotswood, and they have Jennifer Williams, just remarkable young winemaker who has been on board, and before that it was Rosemary Cakebread. You've got, you know, Ashley Hepworth, who's a fabulous young winemaker up at Joseph Phelps, just delightful. Allison Tozette at Colgan, delightful. Anna Monticelli, who's at Pina and also does her own wines. But you have, you know, the legends like Heidi Barrett, who just gives so much to this valley and makes beautiful wines, not only for other people, but her own wines. Amy Aiken, our mutual dear friend, her wines are beautiful. I mean, she's come to the valley. She's, I think about 20 years of winemaking experience here and has added so much. There's just a whole slew. Suzanne Pavitt, Mindy, Leslie Russell, Paula Cornell, Janet Pagano. I'm kind of forgetting it, but these women are really helping not only the vintners, shape the vintners and help protect the Napa brand, and also just promote fine wines and the wine lifestyle, but you have women making phenomenal wines and some just beautiful, beautiful products to educating women about wine and making it less intimidating.
Now, I had a couple of conversations on this particular trip with both men and women, and one particular winemaker who was a male brought this up, and he felt that women had a finer palate overall as a generalization than men. Is that something you might agree with?
Well, it's interesting. I studied wine at the University of Bordeaux, and the first class we all met, it was interesting. The composition of the class was half men, half women, all experts, all people from the wine industry. So it was a professional level year-long program. And the first thing he said when he walked into the class, Gilles de Ravel, phenomenal guy, said, "Well, I must tell you, the women in this class have better palates than the men." And so, you know, I do believe women have fantastic palates, but more specifically than that, I think that anyone can have a great palate. It takes maybe a little bit of education or practice, but more importantly that my palate is different than my best friend's palate. And it's really about what you enjoy drinking, knowing what you enjoy drinking, and feeling very positive about saying, "I like this wine," and not being intimidated about that.
It's a no-fear situation. There's nothing wrong with being in a tasting and saying, "You know, I don't care for that," especially if somebody in the room is maybe a well-respected taster, because you're right, it's sort of like, well, I'll eat a pork chop, and maybe you don't like pork chops.
Absolutely. You know, wine is so much about our past experiences, and I love, my favorite aspects of wines are kind of about aromas, the complexity of aromas, the complexity of textures. Well, aromas is based on your cultural experiences, your experiences around certain things. You know, in this class, I grew up as a typical American eating all that hard candy with all those artificial, you know, strawberry and sour apple. Well, you know, when it came to secondary aromas, I could nail every single one of those. You know, when we had cumin or the smell of cumin in wine, that was something very easy for me to identify, but my French counterparts really had never experienced that. You know, the smell of lychee, the smell of some of the Asian fruits that you find in some of the white wines, again, you know, very specific to different cultures. So, you know, aromas are so much a part of wines, but they're culturally based. And the more you travel, the more experience you have around a certain aroma, the more you can identify with it. Just like in your palate, the more you drink of a certain region, most likely the more you can identify with that region.
What is your next step? What do you have coming up next?
Well, we've done a couple things. We continue to do tastings. Our next tasting is, you know, one of my favorite subjects, aroma identification, the 16 families of aroma identification. So that should be a phenomenal tasting, being sponsored by two women, Ashley Hepworth and Michelle Torres. So very exciting in April. We've done some wine entre femme. We've been invited by different groups to come and do tastings, like wine entre femme tastings. I think that's something we would love to do. We did a big tasting a year ago in San Francisco, and it was so well received by, it was a trade tasting. And I think the energy in the room, there's 40 beautiful women pouring wine. It was convivial. People were happy, and people walked into that room, and the trade just left happy. I mean, it was a great tasting. So we'd love to bring that message. I think that could be an exciting thing to do in other places, possibly Los Angeles, possibly Milwaukee, possibly in other markets.
At the very least, Chicago.
Exactly. Great place. So that's a potential opportunity to do. I think every other year we're going to do this big event where we bring women in, and it's really all about the education, us as a group becoming better educated about how we can do our jobs in a more effective way. And so that undertaking's quite large. It's all volunteer. We all have day jobs. We actually, most of us have families, so we have day jobs and night jobs. So I think we can only pull that off every other year. It's a major undertaking, and I wouldn't be surprised if we have 100 women coming, you know, anywhere from 25 to 40 women from overseas, and, you know, anywhere from 60 women in Napa. So it's a big undertaking, and I think we'll do that in January of next year. Continue to try to reach out to women and make it feel more comfortable to explain wine, make them understand that wine should just be enjoyable. What you like is all you need to know. If you like it, that's what you need to know. Well, you have to have a passion for what you're doing, else right. it's 24/7.
How can listeners learn a little bit more about Wine Entre Femmes?
Well, that is a great, we do have a Facebook page. And
is it just under Wine Entre Femmes?
Wine Entre Femmes, okay. WineEntreFemme. It's actually usually has an S on it, but the there's a Twitter, but Facebook is, there is a website that we're going to revamp, and it's called www.wineentrefemme.com. And it's just trying to provide information about the different women in our group and helping to, you know, put stories in front of different people who are interested in wine.
I think a lot of people would like to look that up. And I have to say, for me, I hope you do one day make it to Milwaukee, or at least Chicago, to be able to let people see this tightness, this whole idea of, you know, grouping together and just simply trying to forward the business, to forward what you're doing. That's great.
Well, thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for taking the time.
You can learn more about Wine Entre Femmes on the web at wineentrefemme.com. In the wine business, family is a constant, especially in Napa Valley. Haley Trefethen of Trefethen Family Vineyards has lived her life surrounded by vines, wineries, and every aspect of the wine business. Haley, along with her brother Lauren, are the third generation of the Trefethen family representing their estate wine, showing that the vine's deep roots are in common to family. We talked with Haley at the Trefethen Winery in Napa Valley in February this year. This was my first visit to the winery, and this is where I learned just what I was missing. Well, we're here at Trefethen Family Vineyards with Haley Trefethen. How are you doing today?
I'm wonderful.
It's great to see you again.
Yeah, it is. It's been a year.
At least a year. It was premiere last year,
yep.
As a matter of fact. And that's where we first met you. No, we met you in Chicago.
Chicago.
That's right, yeah. That was a great tasting.
That was a big one.
That was a lot of fun. We had a good time. Well, thanks for having us here at the winery. And let's talk, I guess, first things. We're talking about some anniversaries right now.
We are. It's a big year. It's been a big, the end of last year, 2010, and now into 2011. We've released the 35th vintages of both our dry Riesling and our Chardonnay. And, you know, this will be our 44th harvest, but I wasn't going to give my parents credit on the dry Riesling. I was really impressed and incredibly proud of my parents for having produced, a Riesling as such, which is up until recently has been such a small varietal for, you know, the dedication that's been behind that wine.
Well, let's talk about that real specifically, the Riesling. Mm-hmm. Is this the grapes grown on your property?
Yep, we're 100% estate. Everything that's Trefethen is 100% estate for this will be 44 years.
Wow. And about how many acres do you have of the Riesling?
On the Riesling, we actually just planted a little bit more, but it won't be into production for another year. So we probably have 30-something, maybe 40. Yeah.
So that equates to about
40-something, yeah.
About how many cases that you release?
Oh, you're going to make me tell secrets? The Riesling's probably one of the four wines that really gets distributed everywhere, but it's the smallest production of those, so it's about 5,000 cases.
Oh, still, that's not bad.
No.
And so what do you have overall?
I'm not going to tell you all my secrets. Come on. Well, we have about... There's 450 acres that are planted right now, and we sell a third of our fruit to other wineries in the Napa Valley.
Oh, wow, a third.
Mm-hmm. That's a big part of, you know, the vineyard side of this industry, yeah.
That's not something I don't think people really always appreciate. You have the business of running a tasting room. You have, of course, the idea of making wine and selling it. And then, of course, you operate vineyards as well.
We started as growers. When my grandparents bought the property, they just really wanted to grow grapes. They didn't have a desire to make wine until my parents came along. And it was, you know, my dad who made our first vintage. And they're the ones who really took off with that. But my grandfather, they were just ready to retire.
So let's talk about the history. Let's talk about this property. I noticed the cornerstone. Well, it wasn't a cornerstone. It was more of a rock, gigantic rock outside the entrance. So tell me about that.
Yeah, well, the winery this year in 2011 is celebrating its 125th birthday. But about 25 years ago, we celebrated our 100th anniversary and were placed on the National Registry as a historical landmark. This winery was a winery in the 1800s. And what people don't know about Napa is there were actually over 100 wineries in Napa in the 1800s. There were 140 when this winery was built in 1886. Then through Prohibition, serious decline. When my grandparents bought the property, there were less than 25 wineries in Napa. So we really were some of the first here. But just that influx, it's interesting to see it repeat itself too. I mean, we started with 25 wineries and now we're up to over 300 that you can visit and a lot more bonded wineries in Napa. But all of them are still really, really quite small.
And that was the Gustav Niebaum era.
It was. And it was actually the architect of this building also built Greystone, CIA, and Farniente. Farniente and this building, well, this is wood and Farniente is stone, were exactly the same architecture, exactly the same on the inside before they remodeled, except Farniente is 1 foot shorter on the north side. We've got it down.
You have your stats. Very good. I'm proud of you. So going back to that time, what was the name of the winery at the time in the 1800s?
It was called Eshkol, which is a biblical reference to kind of a giant cluster of grapes. And so the Goodman brothers came and had Hamden McIntyre build this old gravity flow winery entirely out of redwood. Well, for the most part out of redwood. There's a little bit of a insulation system in there too, but... And it's still all the original wood. I mean, you come in here, there's nothing else like this in Napa Valley. Most of the wooden buildings from that era were burned down. It's incredibly unique. There's nothing else like it. You couldn't build it today if you wanted.
No, that's the thing. One of the many reasons why people should come here to see the space. As I mentioned to you, I had never been here before, and it's stunning. It's really beautiful, and it's quite a drive to come up the drive and to get to the winery itself.
It's pretty unique to drive through our entire estate vineyard before you get to us.
Yeah. So let's talk about you and your part in the winery. You know, I'm looking on your shoulders. You got some weight there with this history behind you. That's a little bit of responsibility, isn't it?
It's definitely. And trying to keep up with my mom, you know, I've got some big shoes to fill and as well some amazing mentors. My parents and, you know, our winemakers and John Roll, director of viticulture and winemaking. I've got the best people here to learn from. I didn't go to school for wine. I grew up, I lived it. Like, it was weird for me to hear that, you know, my friends when I was little had no idea where their parents worked. No idea what they did, where their office was. I grew up in my parents' office. I grew up in this winery. Every day after school, I was here. You know, my brother and I would climb around on barrels, you know, back when that was still safe and allowed. You know, and that was always my life. So when I went off to college, tried to get away, go do other things for a while. But the wine industry is addicting. It draws you back.
I know you're widely distributed. I'm certainly able to find your wine in Wisconsin, which is nice, and I appreciate that. Thank you.
Of course.
But and I don't think people would have too many problems around the country to be able to find your wine.
Not too much, but there's always the ease of going onto our website and ordering. It's trefethen.com, so really pretty easy. We try and keep it always up to date. It's got all the new things that are going on, but we also have a great store. Hopefully it's easy for you guys all to use, and invite you to come and, you know, sign up for our mailing list, hear what's new.
That's great. And you have a wine club as well, correct?
We do. We actually have 3 wine clubs. So if you want a little bit of everything we make, there's Club Trefethen. If you're one of those red onlys, we do have the Grateful Red, fondly known as our Redheads, that club, as well as our Halo Club. And so our Halo is our flagship wine. Yes, it's named after myself and my older brother. It comes from the vineyard that we grew up, the Hillspring Vineyard, and that is our best Cabernet. And so you get a 3-pack of a Halo every year. in your October shipment, so just in time for the holidays.
Nice. What's your brother's name?
Lauren, L-O-R-E-N.
I hadn't gotten that, so a lot of owners dedicating their wines to their children, Robin Lale being an example.
Mm-hmm. It's a sneaky way to try and get us into the business.
I know,
it's
terrible.
It worked, you know? Yeah. I mean, we're, you know, something like 10 or something when that wine comes out, and they're like, so can we name this wine after you? No, they didn't actually ask, but even not like we would ever object. But people do like it when they want my brother and I to talk about this wine. I'm like, go ask my parents. They're the ones who named it. It's kind of awkward for me. I'm like,
you don't want to talk about this wine
with
their name.
Our best wine is named after me. It's kind of...
That's just one more thing on your shoulder.
Yeah, thanks for reminding me.
I can't thank you enough for taking the time. It's been a pleasure knowing you, and this has been a lot of fun talking
to
you.
This is wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Find Trefethen on the web at trefethen.com. Something you might be surprised to find in Napa Valley is a tasting room representing wines made in Sonoma. But that is exactly what Patson Hall is all about. This isn't the first time Napa and Sonoma have crossed over in the wine business, but the bottom line is the end result: excellent Pinot Noir and Chardonnay. Heather Pat spends some time with us in February of this year at the comfortable and homey tasting room located in a business park at the south end of Napa Valley. Well, hi there. I'm here with Heather Patz of Patson Hall at their tasting room in the southern end of Napa Valley. How are you doing?
Very good. Thank you.
Thanks for being here with
Absolutely.
Me today. Absolutely. Let's go all the way back to the beginning. Tell me about where Patson Hall came from. How did everything start?
Well, it is a little bit of a ways back, and when I tell the story, I can't believe it's that long, actually. I start to feel a little bit old, but 88 was our first vintage of Patson Hall. Donald Patz and James Hall, who are our partners, were both working at Flora Springs up in St. Helena. And James was the assistant winemaker, and Donald, it was his first job in marketing and sales. Ann Moses is our other partner, and she worked for Farniente and Spring Mountain Winery, and so she had a background in production. But the four of us would get together in 1988, and we would taste a lot of wines together and really loved the Burgundian style wines. The white Burgundies is the wine that I particularly fell in love with. Obviously, a lot of people do, I guess. But so we started making just a small amount of Napa Valley Chardonnay in 1988. It was about 300 cases. And the four of us, so basically two couples, had other jobs for the first 10 years of our career in Patson Hall. But it started with a vision and a passion of a particular style wine that we really wanted to make. We really wanted to make small lots, very specific to location, so the grapes would really kind of dictate what the wine would be. So that's kind of where it started. We did Napa Valley Chardonnay for about 7 years, and then we bought some fruit from Larry Hyde in Carneros and started making a single vineyard Chardonnay. We ventured into Pinot Noir in 1995, and we're coming up to our 24th harvest, which is hard to believe. We're making about 7 Chardonnays and about 9 Pinot Noirs.
Wow.
Yeah, it's
wow.
a lot.
Yeah.
And it's taking time. Really, the key to our company has been our relationships with the growers. We purchase all our fruit, and we have since day one. James and Ann do have a small Pinot Noir vineyard around their home, which we bottled for the first time in 2009, this vintage.
Is that kind of a private thing?
It's for club members. Mm. It's about 100 cases. It's called Moses Hall, because Ann's last name is Moses, and James's last name is Hall, obviously. So that's been kind of fun. But all the Chardonnays and then all the Pinots are all made in a very similar manner. So there aren't a lot of variables. There may be a little bit difference in the percentage of new oak or maybe how we use the yeast or if it's wild yeast. But basically, when you're tasting these Chardonnays side by side or the Pinot side by side, you can really taste and feel and experience kind of the differences of the wine because of where the grapes come from.
Hmm.
But going back to the growers, because that's the part that really is key to our company, some of these growers we've been working with for 19 years, and it's a really close relationship. We put their name or the name of their vineyard on the label. We work really closely as far as how the vineyard's farmed, when we harvest. We've actually had some vineyards planted specifically for us, which has been a real honor. It didn't start out that way, however. There was a lot of no's first. I'd like to tell the story about dialing for grapes.
Is that what I think you mean?
Yes. There's a purple book. It lists all the vineyards, all the vineyard owners in Sonoma County and who they sell to. And so we would taste wine from specific areas or specific vineyard sites and get to know some of the growers. And the story I tell is that Donald would go through the book and he'd call these growers and say, you know, we're Patson Hall and we'd really be interested in buying some of your fruit. What do you think? And oftentimes they would kind of just like, who are you? I don't think so. So it took, in some cases, 2 or 3 years before we got a yes to some vineyards. And then once we got into a vineyard site, like Larry Hyde's vineyard, it took another several years to move up and into the section of the vineyard that we really, really wanted to be at.
Wow. So you've really got a process going. And part of it's persistence. And then the next thing is patience, right?
Patience and relationship. I mean, these are people that really, I think, love working with us and we love working with them. I have kind of the same philosophy on what it takes to grow, you know, the grapes. And, of course, you have to treat them well by paying them really, really well for their fruit. And then we're also helping to promote their vineyard by putting the name on the label as well.
Vineyard designated wine, that's the focus of what you're doing.
That is the focus of what we do. We are known for making just two varietals, Chardonnay and Pinot Noir, from some of the best single vineyard sites in Northern California. And it's taken time to get to that point. The winemaking that James does is, just wonderful. I mean, he's a very talented winemaker and very conscientious about, you know, every step of the way. So that is part of the mix as well.
Where can our listeners find your wine?
You can find our wine on our website, www.patshall.com.
So the end is left out of it.
Yeah, that's right. It's PATZHALL.com. So you can do that. You can call us. Rosie is great here at our office. I'm here. Courtney's here. Our phone number is 707-265-7700. And you might dial extension 113. That's Rosie. She handles a lot of the orders, and she's great. Tell her hi if you call.
You got to love somebody named Rosie taking
yeah,
that call.
Right.
That's absolutely perfect.
Yeah, exactly. And then we actually started the company just doing wholesale distribution. So that was really our fundamental base for us. So we are distributed in all states. We do some export with some of the bigger production wines we do. We are in some of the finer restaurants and retail shops. And so, you know, if anybody had any questions about a particular wine in their area, they can always call us and we could hopefully lead them to where they might be able to find it as well.
And that's like extended hospitality. It's important for our listeners to know that if they have a question,
yes,
they can call you. That's a great thing to say.
Yeah, we'd love them to call us. So, you know, we don't get enough calls. So,
well, here's everybody's chance. Give them a call.
There you go.
So did you have that epiphany? Did you have that moment sometime in your life where you were like, yeah.
Yes. Most people have a wine story.
Tell me it. I want to hear that.
Well, it was in Eugene, Oregon, and Donald Patz and I had just joined Lesme Divan, which is a national organization for wine enthusiasts. And I didn't really know anything about wines. We were at this one dinner, and somebody brought a Romani Conte Latoche Vineyard Red Burgundy. And, of course, you know, it's supposed to be fabulous wine. And so that's what opened my eyes to wine. I couldn't get over how it smelled, how it made me feel, the experience, you know, of drinking this wine. It was 69, which is supposed to be great. I don't think I could afford to buy one now. But anyway, it was that wine. I kept smelling it, and I kept thinking, if this is what wine is about, this is a wonderful thing. So, yes, that was the moment. And ever since then, there's been many moments. I mean, wine brings some wonderful events and moments into your life, yeah.
And that's comes back to what we were talking about when I first came in. It's the whole idea is it's about people, about those events, and not about being afraid of wine.
That's right. I love that. People should not be afraid of wine at all. They should embrace it. Everyone experiences it differently and ask any questions. This is what I want people to feel comfortable about is you can ask anything, you can feel anything, you can, you know, whatever you want around wine. It's yours.
It's the only way you're going to learn is
by
asking.
That's right.
That's why they should give you a call.
Yes, exactly. I'm really thankful, you know, to be in the wine business and working with the people we do. I grew up in a family that didn't drink wine at all. I grew up in Eugene, Oregon, and never would have imagined being in this industry. So it's been kind of a dream come true, I think, for me, but also for my other three partners. And so we're very thankful, and we do want to be very hospitable and give back and help in any way we can for people to enjoy our wines.
Heather, thank you very much for taking the time. I know it's early.
Yes.
And this is really great coming by and meeting you.
Oh, it's been fabulous meeting you too. Thank you.
Find Pats and Hall on the web at patshall.com.
Thank you for listening to podcast number 33. Remember, you can hear each interview in full by visiting the Life Between the Vines website. Just click on the podcast icon. Our June podcast will come to you from Auction Napa Valley 2011. Once more, we interview everyone from vintners to the volunteers participating at the auction. Part one of this podcast goes online June 15th and part two on June 25th. This podcast is sponsored by Waterford Wine. Find them on the web at waterfordwine.com.
Life Between the Vines is produced by Ray Pfister and Jeff McClellan. Post-production was completed at Fifth Floor Recording Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Edited by Ray Pfister and Dustin Harmon. Original music composed by Tim Turton. Narrated by Kay Paskoff. Web design by Jenny Holland. Our web geek is Tim Panicucci. Photography by Jeanette Herniak. Copyright 2011.